Welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part one of Attack of the Mutant on Dune Reads Goosebumps. Obviously, it's written by R.L. Stine. This is the one that, on the cover of it, it's like a nuclear plant, I think it's what it's supposed to be. And it kind of looks like, you know, the first episode of the animated X-Men series where a morph dies, and they're like, no! It kind of looks like that area, and then there's a superhero. Actually, I apologize, the tagline says, he's no hero. He's no superhero. He's a supervillain! So the supervillain, who looks just different enough from Batman to not get sued, but very close to Batman, and he's diving out. It's very, very noticeable. This is a hardcover Goosebumps. And, let's kick this off. Chapter 1. Hey, put that down! I grabbed the comic book from Wilson Clark's hand and smoothed out the plastic cover. I was only looking at it, he grumbled. If you get a fingerprint on it, it will lose half its value, I told him. I examined the cover through the clear wrapper. This is a Silver Swan number 0, I said, and it's in mint condition. Wilson shook his head. He has curly white blonde hair and round blue eyes. He always looks confused. How can it be number 0? He said. That doesn't make any sense, Skipper. Oh my god, he's named Skipper. How awesome. Wilson is a really good friend of mine, but sometimes I think he's dropped down from the planet Mars. He just doesn't know anything. I held up the Silver Swan cover as he could see the big zero in the so he could see the big zero in the corner. That makes it a collector's item, I explained. Number 0 comes before number 1. This comic is worth 10 times as much as Silver Swan number 1. The number 0, for people who don't know about comics and stuff, is generally reserved for, like what they give out on, like, free comic book day when there's going to be a new comic and stuff like that. It's like a preview version. It's, point is, it's worthless. Even in the, you know, whenever this was made, the 90s, where people thought comics were going to be worth a lot. How'd that work out for you, Kevin? Huh? It is. Wilson scratched his curly hair. He squatted down on the floor and started pawing through my carton of comics. How come all your comics are in plastic bags, Skipper? How can you read them? See, I told you. Wilson don't know shit. Read them? I don't read them, I replied. If you read them, they lose their value. He stared up at me. You don't read them? I can't take them out of the bag, I explained. If I open the bag, they won't be in mint condition anymore. Oh, this one is cool, he exclaimed. He pulled up a copy of Star Wolf. The cover is metal. It's worthless, I mumbled. It's a second printing. He stared at the silvery cover, turning it in his hands, making it shine in the light. Cool, he muttered, his favorite word. We were in my room about an hour after dinner. The sky was black outside my double windows. It gets dark so early in winter, not like on Silver Swan's planet, Orcos 3, where the sun never sets and all the superheroes have to wear air-conditioned costumes.
How did they evolve there? I don't understand how that process works. You can't evolve if no one can live without, especially.
What kind of Borg nonsense is this? Wilson came over to get the math homework. He lives next door, and he always leaves his math book at school, so he always comes over to get the homework from me. You should collect comic books, I told him. In about 20 years, these will be worth millions.
So it's 2012 as of 3 days ago, and this was written in 1994. That is a cruel, cruel joke. It is 18 years from there, and I can't see comics going up in value ever since then. Yeah, every comic from that period is absolutely worthless. absolutely worthless. If you send me a message on a Dune at Dune Reads Goosebumps and just say, hey, send me some comics, here's some shipping, I'll just send them to you. You know? I'll sign to my biggest fan, Ricky C, Dune. And then I'll send the next one to my biggest fan, Juan Gonzalez, Dune. And then you guys can fight and figure out who's the biggest fan. Turns out my mom's my biggest fan. I collect rubber stamps, he said, picking up Z-Squad Annual. He studied the sneaker ad in the back cover. Rubber stamps? Yeah, I have about 100 of them, he said. What can you do with rubber stamps? I asked. He dropped the comic book back into the carton and stood up. Well, you can stamp things with them, he said, brushing off the knees of his jeans. I have different colored ink pads, or you can just look at them. He is definitely weird. Are they valuable? I asked. He shook his head. I don't think so. He picked up the mash sheet from the foot of his bed. My bed. I'd better go home, Skipper. See you tomorrow. He started for the door, and I followed him. Our reflection stared out at us from my big dresser mirror. Wilson is so tall and skinny and blonde and blue eyes. I always feel like a dark, chubby mole next to him. If we were in a comic book, Wilson would be the superhero, and I would be his sidekick. I'd be the pudgy, funny one who's always messing up.
Just like Dune.
It's a good thing life isn't a comic book, right? As soon as Wilson left, I turned my back to the dresser. My eye caught the big computer banner above the mirror. Skipper Matthews, Alien Avenger. My dad had someone in his office print out the banner for me for my 12th birthday a few weeks ago. What a cheapskate. Beneath the banner, I have two great posters tacked on the wall on both sides of the dresser. One is a Jack Kirby Captain America. It's really old and probably worth like $1,000. No big deal. The other one is newer, a Spawn poster by Todd McFarlane. It's really awesome. I used to be obsessed with Spawn toys when I was a kid. When this came out, I guess I was 8 when this came out. That's all. Remember when all action figures were all like the kind of Playmate standard ones, and Todd McFarlane's like, fuck these gay action figures, and made them all badass, and now every action figure has to be badass? Thank you for that, Todd McFarlane.
In the mirror, I could see the excited look on my own face as I hurried to the dresser. The flat brown envelope waited for me on the dresser top. Mom and Dad said I couldn't open it until after dinner, after I finished my homework. But I couldn't wait! I could feel my heart start to pound as I stared down at the envelope. I knew what waited inside it. Just thinking about it made my heart pound even harder. I carefully picked up the envelope. I had to open it now. I had to.
My name is Dune, and I'm miserable and hate my life.
Chapter 2. Carefully, I tore the flap of the envelope. Then I reached inside and pulled out the treasure. This month's issue of The Masked Mutant.
It's probably the guy on the cover.
Holding the comic book in both hands, I studied the cover. The Masked Mutant, number 24. In jagged red letters across the bottom, I read, A Tight Squeeze for the Sensational Sponge. The cover art was awesome. It showed Sponge Life, known across the universe as the Sponge of Steel, in terrible trouble. He was caught in the tentacles of a giant octopus. The octopus was squeezing him dry. Like crazy tentai porn. Awesome! Totally awesome! I keep all my comic books in mint condition, wrapped in collector's bags. But there is one comic that I have to read every month, and that is The Masked Mutant. I have read it, I have to read it as soon as it comes out. And I read it cover to cover, every word in every panel. I even read the letters page.
Well, that you should read the letters page. That's only respectful to the writer. That's, you know, why wouldn't you read the letters page? It's like 2 pages of text. Apparently Skip doesn't read Goosebumps, you know? It's not that hard to read, Skippy.
That's because The Masked Mutant is the best drawn, best written comic in the fucking world, and The Masked Mutant has to be the most powerful, most evil villain ever created. What makes him so terrifying is that he can move his molecules around. That means he can change himself into anything that's solid. Anything! Even a girl. On this cover, the giant octopus is actually The Masked Mutant. You can tell because the octopus is wearing the mask The Masked Mutant always wears, but he can change himself into any animal. people or any object. That's how he always escapes from the League of Good Guys. There are 6 different superheroes in the League of Good Guys. They are all mutants, too, with amazing powers, and they are the world's best law enforcers. But they can't catch the masked mutant. Even the League's leader, the Galloping Gazelle, the fastest man in the fucking solar system, isn't fast enough to keep up with the masked mutant. I studied the cover for a few minutes. I like the way the octopus's tentacles squeeze sponge life into a limp rag. You could see by his expression that the sponge of steel was in mortal pain. Awesome. I carried the comic over to the bed and sprawled onto my stomach to read it. The story began where the masked mutant number 23 left off. Sponge Life, the world's best underwater swimmer, was deep in the ocean. He was desperately trying to escape from the masked mutant, but the sponge of steel had caught his cape on the edge of a coral reef. I turned the page. As the masked mutant drew nearer, he began to move his molecules around, and he changed himself into a huge, really gross octopus. Whoa! There were 8 drawings showing the masked mutant transform himself, and then came a big full-page drawing showing the enormous reaching enormous octopus reaching out its slimy fat tent. Do you know how hard it is for me with my childish mind to keep reading tentacles? Every time my mind's like, hey dude, say testicles. And I'm like, no, mind, we're not going to say testicles. And then it's like, dude, slimy fat. And then I'm like, slimy fat, test, god damn it. Slimy fat tentacles to grab the helpless Sponge Life. Sponge Life struggled to pull away, but the octopus's tentacles slid closer, closer. I started to turn the page, but before I could move, I felt something cold and slimy wrap itself around my neck.
Chapter 3.
I let out a gasp and tried to struggle free, and the cold tentacles wrapped themselves tighter around my throat. I couldn't move, I couldn't scream. I heard laughter. With great effort, I turned around and saw Mitzi, my 9-year-old sister. Mitzi and Skipper?
Wow, he took a lot of creative license with this one, RL.
She pulled her hands away from my neck and jumped back as I glared at her. Why are your hands so cold? I demanded. She smiled at me with her innocent, 2-dimpled smile. I put them in the refrigerator.
You what?
I cried. You put them in the refrigerator? Why?
So they'd be cold, she replied, still grinning.
My sister has a really dumb sense of humor. She has straight, dark brown hair like me, and she's short and a little chubby like me. You scared me to death, I told her, sitting up onto bed. I know, she replied. She rubbed her hands on my cheeks. They were still cold. Yuck, get away, Mitzi. I shoved her back. Why did you come here? Just to scare me? She shook her head. Dad told me to come up. He said to tell you if you're reading comic books instead of doing your homework, you're in big trouble. She lowered her brown eye to the comic book open on the bed.
It said brown eyes, but then I said brown eye like, get, like butthole. Oh, by the way, this is a, it doesn't say explicit, but this is an explicit podcast. It's lots of hot butthole talk going on.
No, wait! I grabbed her arm. This is the new Masked Mutant. I have to read it. Tell Dad to fuck off, or just tell him I'm doing my math homework, and... I didn't finish what I was saying because my dad stepped into the room. The ceiling light reflected in his glasses, but I could still see that his eyes are open on the comic book on my bed. Skipper, he said in an angry, he said angrily in his booming, deep voice. Mitzi pushed past him and ran out of the room. She liked to cause trouble, but she never wanted to stay around once things got really ugly. And I knew things were about to get ugly because I had already been warned 3 times that week about spending too much time with my comic book collection. Skipper, do you know why your grades are so bad? My dad bellowed. Because I'm not a very good student, I replied. A mistake. Dad hates it when I answer back. Dad reminds me of a big bear. Not only because he growls a lot, but because he is big and broad. He has short, black hair and almost no forehead. His hair stands almost right above his glasses, and he has a big, booming roar of a voice, like a bear's roar.
Yeah, just like old Dune.
Well, after I answered him back, he let out an angry roar. Then he lumbered across the room and picked up my carton of comic books. My entire collection. Sorry, Skipper. I'm tossing all these out, he cried, and headed for the door. Ugh, parents just don't understand. The same thing happened to me, so I can relate to Skipper. But it wasn't as much my parents as it was my horrible old landlord, who's like, I'll fix the garage roof. And I was like, really? You said that a long time ago. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'll do it. And then they're like, I could fix the garage ceiling, or I could get drunk and not answer your phone calls. And then they chose that one. And then all my comics got ruined, and they didn't care because I lived in the ghetto. Chapter 4. You probably expected me to panic, to start begging and pleading for him not to throw away my valuable collection. But I didn't say shit. I just stood beside the bed with my hands lowered at my sides and waited. You see, Dad's done this before, lots of times. But he doesn't really mean it. He has a bad temper, but he's no supervillain. Actually, I'd put him in the League of Good Guys most of the time. His main problem is that he doesn't approve of comic books. He thinks they're just trash, even when I explain that my collection will probably be worth millions by the time I'm his age. Anyway, I stood there and waited silently. Dad stopped at the door and turned around. He held the carton in both hands. He narrowed his dark eyes at me through his black framed glasses. Stupid pages. Are you going to get to your work? He asked sternly. I nodded. Yes, sir, I muttered, staring at my feet. He lowered the carton a little. It's really heavy, even for a big, strong guy like him. And you won't waste any more time tonight on comic books? He demanded. Couldn't I just finish this new one? I asked. I pointed to the Masked Mutant comic on the bed. Another mistake. He growled at me and turned to carry the carton away. Okay, 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 I cried. Sorry, I'll get my homework done, Dad. I promise. I'll start right now. He grunted and stepped back into the room. Then he dropped the carton back against the wall. That's all you think about day and night, Skipper, he said quickly. Comics, comics. It isn't healthy, really. It isn't. I didn't say anything. I knew he was about to go back downstairs. I don't want to hear any more about comics, Dad said gruffly. Understood? Okay, I muttered. Sorry, Dad. I waited to hear his heavy footsteps going down the stairs. Then I turned back to the new issue of the Masked Mutant. I was desperate to find out how Sponge Life escaped from the giant octopus. I feel like people are misunderstanding when I say Sponge Life. It's one word, except for the L in life is capitalized as well, and it's just sponge. As in, you know, the guy who lives in a pineapple under the sea. And life, as in that thing I just can't stand. And it's just one word, just sponge life. Kind of like thug life. Like if you'd get a sponge life tattoo if you were just destined to be a dishwasher the rest of your life. No? Alright. But I could hear Mitzi nearby. She was still upstairs. If she saw me reading the comic book, she'd run downstairs and tell Dad for sure. Mitzi's a cunt. So I opened my backpack and started pulling out my math notebook and my science textbooks and other stuff I needed. I zipped through the math questions as fast as I could. I probably got most of the problems wrong, but I don't care. I'm not any good at math anyway. Maybe you would be if you applied yourself, Skipper. Then I read the chapter on atoms and molecules in my science text. Reading about molecules made me think of the Masked Mutant. I couldn't wait to get back to the comic book. I finally finished my homework a little after 9:30. I had to skip a few essay questions on the literature homework, but only the class brains answer all the questions. I went downstairs and fixed myself a bowl of sweet, sweet marijuana. Oh, dog, check it out, 420. Dude, bro. Oh, no, sorry. Frosted Flakes, my favorite late-night snack. After I've been getting high on marijuana, Dune did it again. Then I said goodnight to my parents and hurried back to my room, closing the door behind me, eager to get back to bed and start reading. Back under the ocean, Sponge Life escaped by squishing himself so small he slipped out of the octopus's tentacles. Pretty cool, I thought. The Masked Mutant waved his tentacles angrily and vowed he'd get Sponge Life another day. Then he changed his molecules back so he looked like himself and flew back to his headquarters. His headquarters! I stared down at the comic book in shock. The secret headquarters of the Masked Mutant had never been shown before. Oh, sure, we'd been given glimpses of a room or two on the inside, but this time, we got to see the entire building as shown from the outside. I brought the page up to my face and examined it carefully. What a weird place! I exclaimed out loud. The headquarters building didn't look like a building I'd ever seen before. It certainly didn't look like the secret hideout of the world's worst villain. It kind of looked like a giant fire hydrant, a very tall fire hydrant that reached up to the sky.
Franklin's thinking about peeing on that, because dogs like to pee on fire hydrants.
All pink stucco with a huge green domed roof. Weird, I repeated. But of course it was the perfect hiding place. Who would ever think that the super bad guy of all time stayed in a building that looked like an enormous pink fire hydrant? I turned the page. That's not the best hiding place. How's that the perfect hiding place? A giant pink fire hydrant.
He should just live in a soulless condo complex like old Dune, wasting away with a bunch of other people that have no personality, just like me.
I turned the page. The masked mutant slipped into the building and disappeared into an elevator. He rode all the way to the top and stepped out into his private communications center. Waiting for him there was a big surprise, a dark figure. We could only see his black silhouette, but I could tell instantly who it was. It was the Galloping Gazelle, the leader of the good guys. Of the League of Good Guys. How did the gazelle get in? What was he about to do? To be continued next month. Just like I do all the time, except for it takes me like 3 months.
Not anymore. I'm all about it.
Wow, I closed the comic. My eyelids felt heavy. My eyes were too tired to read the tiny type on the letters page. I decided to save it for tomorrow. Yawning, I carefully set the comic book down on my bed table. I fell asleep before my head hit the pillow.
That's dangerous.
2 days later, a very cold, clear day, Wilson came running up to me after school. His blue coat unzipped. He never zipped his coat. He didn't like the way it looked when it was zipped. I had on a shirt, a sweater, and a heavy quilted down coat zipped up to my chin, and I was still cold. "What, Wilson?" I asked. His breath steamed up in front of him. "Want to come over and see my rubber stamp collection?" Was he kidding? "I have to go to the orthodontist," I told him. "My braces got comfortable. He has to tighten them so they'll hurt again." Oh no, braces. Wilson nodded. His blue eyes matched his coat. "How are you getting there?" I pointed to the bus stop. "City bus," I told him. "I've seen you take that bus a lot," he said. "There's a comic book store on Goodale Street," I replied, shifting my backpack onto the other shoulder. "I take the bus there once a week or so to see what new comics have come out. The orthodontist is just a few blocks from it." "Do they have rubber stamps at the comic book store?" Wilson asked. Axed. "I don't think so," I told him. I saw the blue and white city bus turn the corner. "Gotta run. See you later," I called. I turned and ran full speed to the bus stop. The driver was a nice guy. He saw me running and waited for me. Breathing hard, I thanked him and climbed onto the bus. I probably wouldn't have thanked him if I had known where this bus was going to take me. But I didn't know that I was carrying me to the most frightening adventure of my life. Whoa! I bet we're going to learn more about this adventure on
Chapter 5.
The bus was unusually crowded. I stood for a while, then two people got off, and I slid into a seat. As the bus bounced along Main Street, I stared out the passing houses and front yards. Dark clouds hung low over the roofs. I wondered if we were about to get our first snowfall of the winter. The comic book store was a few blocks away. I checked my watch, thinking maybe I had time to stop there before my orthodontist appointment. But no. No time for comics today. "Hey, do you go to Franklin?" A girl's...
That's my dog's name. He looked up. That's cute. I like that dog. That's why I talk about him fucking constantly.
A girl's voice interrupted my thoughts. I turned to see that a girl had taken the seat beside me. Her carrot-colored hair was tied back in a single braid. She had green eyes and light freckles on her nose. She wore a heavy blue and red plaid ski sweater over faded jeans. She held her red canvas backpack on her lap.
"Yeah, I go there," I replied.
"How is it?" she asked. She narrowed her green eyes at me, as if checking me out.
It's okay, I told her. What's your name? She asked. Skipper, I told her. She snickered. That's not a real name, is it? It's what everyone calls me, I said. Do you live in a boat or something? She asked. Her eyes crinkled up. I could see she was laughing at me. I guess Skipper is kind of a dumb name, but I've gotten used to it. I like it a lot better than my real name, Bradley. When I was a little kid, I was always in a hurry, I told her, so I used to skip a lot. Really, that's why you skipped a lot, because you were in a hurry? That's why they started calling me Skipper. It had nothing to do with Barbie's little sister that had come out the previous year and me looking like her and skipping around and being a total homosexual. Cute, she replied with a smirk. I don't think I like this girl, I told myself. What's your name? I asked her. Skipper, she replied, grinning. Same as yours. No. Really, I insisted. It's Libby, she said finally. Libby Zax. She stared past me out the window. The bus stopped for a red light. A baby started crying in the back. Where are you going? Libby asked me. Home? I didn't want to tell her I had an orthodontist appointment. That was too geeky. I'm going to the comic book store, I said. The one on Gooddale. You collect comics? She sounded surprised. So do I. It was my turn to be surprised. Most of the comic book collectors I know are boys. What kind do you collect? I asked. High School Harry and Beanhead, she replied. I collect all the digest-sized ones, and some of the regular ones, too. Yuck. I made a face. High School Harry and his pal Beanhead? Those comics stink. No, they don't, Libby insisted. Those are for babies, I muttered. They're not real comics. They're very well written, Libby replied. And they're funny. She stuck her tongue out at me. Maybe you just don't get them. Yeah, maybe, I said, rolling my eyes. I gazed out the window. The sky had grown darker. I didn't recognize any of the stores. I saw a restaurant called Pearls and a tiny barber shop. Had we passed the comic book store? Libby folded her hands over her red backpack. What do you collect? All that superhero junk? Yeah, I told her. My collection is worth about $1,000. Maybe 2,000. In your dreams, she shot back. She laughed. High School Harry comics never go up in value, I informed her. Even the number ones are worthless. You couldn't give $5 for your whole collection. Why would I want to sell them? She argued. I don't want to sell them, and I don't care what they're worth. I just like to read them. Yeah. Libby agrees with old Dune. Art must be free. It says the guy who puts out other people's work on the internet for free. Shh. Shh. I'm unaware this might be morally wrong. Then you're not a real collector, I said. Are all the boys at Franklin like you? Libby asked. No, I'm the coolest one, I declared. We both laughed. I still couldn't decide if I liked her or not. She was pretty cute looking, and she was funny, in a nasty sort of way. I stopped laughing when I glanced out the window and realized I had definitely passed my stop. I saw the bare trees of a small park I'd never seen before. The bus rumbled past it, and more unfamiliar stores came into view. I felt a sudden stab of panic in my chest. I didn't know this neighborhood at all. I pushed the bell and jumped to my feet. What's your problem? Libby demanded. My stop. I missed it, I stammered. She moved her legs in the aisle so that I could squeeze past. The bus squealed to a stop. I called out goodbye and hurried out the back door. Where am I? I asked myself, glancing around. Where did I let myself get into an... Why did I let myself get into an argument with that girl? Why didn't I pay attention instead? Are you lost? A voice asked. I turned and saw, to my surprise, that Libby had followed me off the bus. What are you doing here? I blurted out. It's my stop, she replied. I live two blocks down that way, she pointed. I have to go back, I said, turning to leave. And as I turned, something came into view that made my breath catch in my throat. Oh, I let out a startled cry and stared across the street. But that's impossible, I exclaimed. I was staring at a tall building on the other corner, a tall pink stucco building with a bright green domed roof. I was staring at the secret headquarters of the Masked Mutant.
Chapter 6.
"Skipper, what's wrong?" Libby cried. I couldn't answer her. I stared, goggle-eyed, at the building across the street. My mouth dropped open. My jaw nearly hit my knees. I raised my eyes to the bright green roof. Then I slowly lowered them over the pink, shiny walls. I had never seen colors like these in real life. They were comic book colors. It was a comic book building. But here I was, standing on the corner across the street. "Skipper, are you okay?" Libby's voice sounded far away. "It's real," I told myself. "The secret headquarters building is of the magic, but Dad, the secret headquarters building of the mass mutant is real!" Or is it? Two hands shook me by the shoulder, snapping me out of my amazed thoughts. "Skipper, are you in shock or something? That building," I stammered. "Isn't that the ugliest thing you ever saw?" Libby asked, shaking her stupid head. She pushed back her carrot-colored braid and hiked her backpack onto her shoulder. "But it's... I still couldn't speak. My dad says the architect had to be colorblind," Libby said. "It doesn't even look like a building. It looks like a blimp standing on its end." "How long has it been there?" I asked, my eyes studying the glass doors that were the only entrance. Libby shrugged. "My family just moved here last spring. It was already here." The clouds darkened over it. "Scarlet, stop. No. Don't scratch the couch." It's exciting stuff. You don't get that in real audiobooks. The clouds darkened overhead. A cold wind swirled around the corner. "Who do you think works in there?" Libby asked. "There's no sign or anything on the building." Of course there's no sign, I thought. "It's the secret headquarters, the world's most evil villain. There's no way the masked mutant would put a sign out front. He doesn't want the League of Good Guys to find his secret headquarters," I told myself. "This is crazy," I cried. I turned and saw Libby staring at me. "You sure you're okay? It's just a building, Skipper. No need to get ballistic." I could feel my face turning red. Libby must think I'm some kind of nut, I realized. I think I saw this building somewhere," I tried to explain. "I gotta go home," she said, glancing up at the darkening sky. "Wanna come over? I'll show you my comic book collection." "No, I'm late for my orthodontist appointment," I replied. "Huh?" She narrowed her green eyes at me. "You said you were going to the comic book store." I could feel my face turning even redder. "I'm going to the comic book store after my appointment," I told her. "How long have you had your braces?" she asked. I groaned. "Forever." She started backing away. "Well, see you sometime." "Yeah, bye." She turned and jogged down the street. She must think I'm a total geek, I thought, unhappily. But I couldn't help it. I really was in shock seeing that building. I turned back to it. The top of the building had become hidden by the lowering clouds. Now, the building looked like a sleek, pink rocket ship reaching up to the clouds. A moving truck rumbled past. I waited for it to go by, then hurried across the street. There was no one on the sidewalk. I hadn't seen anyone go into the building or come out of it. "It's just a big office building," I told myself. "Nothing to get excited about." But my heart was pounding as I stopped a few feet from the glass doors at the entrance. I took a deep breath and peeked in. I know it's crazy, but I really expected to see people wearing superhero costumes walking around in there. I narrowed my eyes and squinted through the glass doors. I couldn't see anyone. It appeared dark inside. I took a step closer. Then another! I brought my face right up to the glass and peered in. I could see a wide lobby, pink and yellow walls, and a row of elevators near the back. But no people. No one. Empty. I grabbed the glass door handle. My throat made a loud gulping sound as I swallowed hard. Should I go in? I asked myself. Do I dare? If we choose to go inside of the crazy building, turn to page 25. If there's no other option, because this isn't a Give Yourself Goosebumps book, also turn to page 25. Chapter 7. My hand tightened on the glass door handle. I started to tug the heavy door. Then, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a blue and white bus moving toward me. I glanced at my watch. I was only 5 minutes late for my appointment. If I jumped on that bus, I could be at the orthodontist in 5 minutes. Letting go of the handle, I turned and ran to the bus stop, my backpack bouncing on my shoulders. I felt disappointed, but I also felt relieved. Walking into the headquarters of the meanest mutant in the universe was a little scary. The bus eased to a stop. I waited for an elderly man to step off. That was very polite of him. Then I climbed on board, dropped my money into the box, and hurried to the back of the bus. I wanted to get one last look at the mysterious pink and green building. Two women were sitting in the back seat, but I pushed between them and pressed my face against the back window. As the bus pulled away, I stared at the building. Its colors stayed bright, even though the sky was so dark behind it. The sidewalk was empty. I still hadn't seen anyone come out or go inside. A few seconds later, the building disappeared into the distance. I turned away from the window and walked up the aisle to find a seat. Weird, I thought. Totally weird. And it was that exact same building as in the comic book? Wilson asked. His blue eyes stared across the lunchroom table at me. I nodded. As soon as I got home yesterday afternoon, I checked the comic book. The building was exactly the same. Wilson pulled a sandwich from his lunch bag and started to unwrap the foil. What kind of sandwich did your mom pack for you? He asked. I opened mine. Tuna salad. What's yours? He lifted a slice of bread and examined the sandwich. Tuna salad, he replied. Want to trade? We both have tuna salad, I told him. Why do you want to trade? He shrugged. Eh. We traded sandwiches. His mom's tuna salad was better than mine. I pulled the juice box from my lunch bag. Then I tossed the apple in the trash. I kept telling my mom not to pack a stupid apple. I told her just throw it away every day. Why does she keep packing one? Oh, God, she must love me so much, and I don't appreciate it at all. Can I have your pudding container? I asked Wilson. No, he replied. I finished the first half of the sandwich. I was thinking hard about the mysterious building. I'd been thinking about it ever since I saw it. I solved the mystery, Wilson said. He scratched his white blonde curls. A smile formed on his face. Yes, I solved it. What? I demanded eagerly. It's simple, Wilson replied. Who draws the masked mutant? The artist? I asked. Jimmy Steranko. Jimmy the Stanko, am I right up top? Of course. Stanko created the masked mutant and the League of Good Guys. How could Wilson not know that? Well, I bet this Steranko was here one day, Wilson continued, jabbing the straw on the top of his juice box. Steranko? Here? In Riverview Falls? Why does every single Goosebumps book have falls in the name of the town? I don't think I've ever been somewhere that ends in falls. Now I gotta think. This is really boring. God, I wish I had the effort or energy to edit things like this out. I said I wasn't following him. Wilson nodded. Let's say Steranko is here. He's driving down the street and he sees that weird building. He stops his car. He gets out and he stares at the building and he thinks, what a great building! This building would make a perfect secret headquarters building for the masked mutant. Wow, I see, I murmured. I was catching on to Wilson's thinking. You mean he saw the building, liked it, and copied it when he drew the headquarters building. Ah, so he just traces things like Rob Liefeld. Okay. Wilson nodded. He had a piece of celery stuck in his front tooth. Yeah, maybe he got out of the car and sketched the building. Then he kept the sketches in a drawer or something till he needed them. It made sense. Actually, it made too much sense. What does that mean? I felt really disappointed. I knew it was silly, but I really wanted that building to be the Masked Mutant secret headquarters. Wilson had spoiled everything. Why do you have to be so sensible for once? I got some new rubber stamps, he told me, finishing the last spoonful from his pudding container. Want to see them? I could bring them to your house after school. No thanks, I replied. That would be too exciting. You know, that's really rude. I'm just saying, like, if I had a friend that was really passionate about something, even if I felt that it was ridiculous, like, I would give it a try. Like, you know? That's all. That's just rude. I'm just saying that's a really rude thing. Like, you know, people are like, oh, Magic the Gathering, that seems nerdy. But then you start playing, then you get addicted, then you don't read any Goosebumps anymore, and you just want to play Magic cards all day. You know, that's what rubber stamps could be. I planned to take the bus and go see the building again that afternoon, but Miss Partridge gave us a shit ton of homework. I had to go straight home. The next day it snowed. Wilson and I and some other guys went sledding on Grover's Hill. A week later, I finally had a chance to go back and take another look at the building. This time, I'm going inside, I told myself. There must be a receptionist or a guard, I declared. I'll ask whose building it is and who works there. I was feeling really brave as I climbed on the bus after school. It was an ordinary office building, after all. Nothing to get excited about. Taking a seat in the front of the bus, I looked for Libby. The bus was filled with kids going home after school. Near the back, I saw a red-haired girl arguing with another girl. But it wasn't Libby. No sign of her. I stared out the window as the bus rolled past the comic book store. Then, a few blocks later, we bounced past my orthodontist's office. Just seeing his building made my teeth ache. Ugh! It was a sunny, clear afternoon. Bright sunlight kept filling the bus windows, forcing me to shield my eyes as I stared out. I had to keep careful watch because I wasn't sure where the stop was. I really didn't know this neighborhood at all. Kids were jammed in the aisle, so I couldn't see out the windows on the other side of the bus. I hope we haven't already passed the building, I thought. I had a heavy feeling in the pit of my stomach. I have a real fear of getting lost. My mom says that when I was 2, she lost me for a few minutes in the frozen food sections at Pick and Pay. I think I've had a fear of getting lost ever since. The bus pulled to a bus stop. I recognized the small park across the street. This was the stop. Getting off, I shouted, jumping into the aisle. I hit a boy with my backpack as I stumbled to the front door. Sorry, getting off. Getting off. I pushed through the crowd of kids and leaped down the steps onto the curb. The bus rumbled away. Sunlight streamed around me. I stepped to the corner. Yes, this was the right stop. I recognized it all now. I turned and raised my eyes to the strange building. And I found myself staring at a large, empty lot. The building was gone. The building was gone.
Chapter 8, the building was gone.
Whoa! I cried out, frozen in shock. Shielding my eyes with one hand, I stared across the street. How could that enormous building vanish in 1 week? I didn't have long to think about it. Another bus pulled up to the stop. Skipper! Hey, Skipper! Libby hopped off the bus, waving and calling my name. She was wearing the same red and blue ski sweater and faded jeans, torn at one knee. Her hair was pulled straight back, tied in a ponytail with a blue hair scrunchie. Hey, what are you doing back in my neighborhood? She asked, smiling as she ran over to me. That building, I stammered, pointing to the vacant lot. It's gone! Libby's expression changed.
Well, don't say hi or anything, she muttered, frowning at me.
Hi, I said. What happened to the building? She turned and followed my stare. Then she shrugged.
Guess I tore it down.
But, I spattered. It was so ugly, Libby said. Maybe the city made them tear it down. God, as a libertarian, that just makes me cringe. But did you see them tear it down? I demanded impatiently. You live near here, right? Did you see them doing it? She thought about it, crinkling her green eyes as she thought, well, no, she replied finally. I've gone past here a few times, but you didn't see any machinery? I demanded anxiously. Any big wrecking balls? Any bulldozers? Dozens of workers? Libby shook her head. No, I didn't actually see anyone tearing that building down. But it didn't really look. She pulled her red backpack off her shoulder and held the strap in front of her with both hands. I don't know why you're so interested in that ugly building, Skipper. I'm glad it's gone. But it was in the comic book, I blurted out. Huh? She stared hard at me. What the fuck are you talking about? I knew she wouldn't understand. Girls never understand. Except for sweet, sweet comic book girls. Oh, Rogue, the things you do to me. Nothing, I muttered. Skipper, did you come all the way out here just to see that building? She asked. No way, I lied. Of course not. Do you want to come to my house and see my comic book collection? I was so frazzled and mixed up, I said yes. I hurried out of
I herped and derped and derped and herped. I hurried out of Libby's house less than an hour later. Those High School Harry and the Beanhead comics are the most boring comics in the world, and the art is so lame. Can't everyone see that two girls are drawn exactly the same, except one has blonde hair and one has black hair? Yuck! Libby insisted on showing me every High School Harry and Beanhead comic she had, and she had shelves full of them. Of course, I couldn't concentrate on those boring fucking comics. I couldn't stop thinking about the weird building. How could a whole building vanish without a trace? I jogged back to the bus stop on Main Street. The sun was sinking behind the buildings. Long blue shadows tilted over the sidewalks. When I got to the corner, I bet the building will be back, I kept thinking to myself. But of course it wasn't. I know, I have weird thoughts. I guess it comes from reading too many comic books. I had to wait nearly half an hour for the bus to come. I spent the entire time staring at the empty lot, thinking about the vanished building. When I finally got home, I found a brown envelope waiting for me on the little table in the hall where my mom drops the mail. Yes! I exclaimed happily. The special issue of the Masked Mutant! The comics company was sending out two special editions this month, and this was the first. I called hi to my mom, tossed my coat and heavy backpack on the floor, and raced up the stairs to my room, the comic book gripped tightly in my hot little hand. Let's see if this fucks up the audio. I'm laying down on the couch and now in some weird position. Ya-da-da-da, looking at the levels. I couldn't wait to see what had happened after the galloping gazelle sneaked into the Masked Mutant's headquarters. Carefully, I slid the comic book out of the envelope and examined the cover. And there it stood. The pink and green headquarters building, right on the cover. Just like on the cover of this book. Look, me and Skipper have something in common. But that's where the similarities end, Skipper. I'm too cool for you. My hand trembled as I opened the first page. Morning of the Mutant was the big title in scary red letters. The Masked Mutant stood in front of a big communications console. He stared into a wall of about 20 TV monitors. Each TV monitor showed a different member of the League of Good Guys. I'm tracking each one of them, the Masked Mutant said in the first dialogue balloon. They'll never find me. I've thrown an invisibility curtain around my entire headquarters.
Oh,
my mouth dropped open as I read those words. I read them three times before I let the comic book slip out of my hands onto the bed. An invisibility curtain. No one can see the Masked Mutant's building because he slipped an invisibility curtain around it. I sat excitedly on the edge of my bed, breathing hard, feeling the blood pulse at my temples. Is this what happened in real life? Is this why I couldn't see the pink and green building this afternoon? Was the comic book giving me the answer to the mystery of the missing building? It sounded crazy. It sounded totally crazy. But was it real? Was there really an invisibility curtain hiding the building? My head was spinning faster than the amazing Tornado Man. I knew only one thing. I had to go back there and find out.
Let me see how many pages this motherfucking book has so I can see where the stopping point is on the motherfucking book. It's probably something like 131 pages because that's how long every Goosebumps book is. Oh my god, where are the page numbers? Seriously, where are the page numbers? What the hell?
This is weird.
Oh god, I need to learn how to edit things. Stupid books. Why did the page... Let's just assume 130? So that means I stop at, what, 65? Yeah, that's math.
Chapter 9. After school the next afternoon, I had to go with my mom to the mall to buy sneakers. I usually try on at least 10 or 12 pairs, then beg for the most expensive ones. You know, the ones that pump up or flashlights when you walk in them. Yes, he finally referenced LA Gear sneakers. I've been talking about those in every other goddamn Goosebumps book, and he finally referenced them. Yes! Oh, God, I can die happy.
You know, I might just kill myself right now.
God, I'd like to do that. But this time, I bought the first pair I saw. Plain black and white Reeboks. I mean, who could think about sneakers when an invisible building was waiting to be discovered? Driving home from the mall, I started to tell my mom about the building, but she stopped me after a few sentences. I wish you were as interested in your schoolwork as you are in those dumb comics, she said, sighing. That's what she always says. When is the last time you read a good book? She continued. Hi, sweetie Petey. Cat's right here. That's the next thing she always says. I decided to change the subject. We dissected a worm today for science, I told her. She made a disgusted face. Doesn't your teacher have anything better to do than cut up poor, innocent worms? There was just no pleasing my mom today. I know. You should ask your dad. Up top. Orgasms. The next afternoon, wearing my new sneakers, I eagerly hopped the city bus, tossing my token into the box. I saw Libby sitting near the back. As the bus lurched away from the curb, I stumbled down the aisle and dropped beside her, lowering my backpack to the floor. I'm going back to that building, I said breathlessly. I think there's an invisibility curtain around it. Don't you ever say hi? She complained, rolling her eyes. I said hi. Then I repeated what I said about the invisibility curtain. I told her I read about it in the newest Masked Mutant comic, and that the comic may be giving clues as to what was happening in real life. Is that like a sign of schizophrenia? Libby listened to me intently, not blinking, not moving. I could see she was finally starting to see why I was so excited about finding this building. When I finished explaining everything, she put a hand on my forehead. You don't feel hot, she said. Let me put a finger up your butt to test you there. Oh, God, dude, you're on fire. Are you seeing a shrink? Huh? I pushed her hand away. Are you seeing a shrink? You're totally out of your fucking mind. You know that, don't you? I'm not crazy, I said. I'll prove it. Come with me. All I want is a Pepsi. She edged closer to the window, as if trying to get away from me. No way, she declared. I can't believe I'm sitting here with a boy who thinks that comic books come to life. She pointed out the window. Hey, look, Skipper. There goes the Easter Bunny. He's handing an egg to the Tooth Fairy. She laughed, a mean laugh. Ha, ha, I muttered angrily. I have a good sense of humor, but I don't like being laughed at by girls who collect High School Harry and the Beanhead comics. The bus pulled up to the bus stop. I hoisted my backpack and scrambled out the back exit. Libby stepped off right behind me. As the bus pulled away, sending out puffs of black exhaust behind it, I gazed across the street. No building, an empty lot. Well, I turned to Libby, you coming? She twisted her mouth into a thoughtful expression. To that empty lot? Skipper, are you going to feel like a jerk when there's nothing there? Well, go home then, I told her sharply. Okay, I'll come, she said, grinning. We crossed the street. Two teenagers on bikes nearly ran us over. Missed him, one of them cried. The other one laughed. How do we get through the invisibility curtain? Libby asked. Her voice sounded serious, but I could see by her eyes that she was laughing at me. In the comic book, people just step through it, I told her. You can't feel it or anything. It's just like a smoke screen. But once you step through it, you can see the building. All right, let's try it, Libby said. She tossed her ponytail over her shoulder. Let's get this shit over with, okay? Then we gotta make out. Ugh, gross, comic books, not making out. Walking side by side, we took a step across the sidewalk toward the empty lot. Then another step, then another. We crossed the sidewalk and stepped onto the hard dirt. I can't believe I'm doing this, Libby grumbled. We took another step. I can't believe I'm... She stopped because the building popped into view. Oh! We both cried out in unison. She grabbed my wrist and squeezed it hard. Her hand was ice cold. We stood a few feet from the glass entrance. The bright walls of the pink and green building rose above us. You were right, Libby stammered, still squeezing my wrist. I swallowed hard. I tried to talk, but my mouth was suddenly too dry. I coughed and no words came out. Now what? Libby asked, staring up at the shiny walls. I couldn't speak. The comic book is real, I thought. The comic book is real. Does this mean the building really belongs to the masked mutant? Whoa! I warned myself to slow down. My heart was already racing faster than Speed Boy. Sometimes I become Speed Boy. Now what? Libby repeated impatiently. Let's get away from here, okay? For the first time, she sounded really frightened. No way! I told her, come on, let's go in. She tugged back at me. Go in? Are you crazy? We have to, I told her. Come on, don't stop to think about it. Let's go. I took a deep breath, pulled open the heavy glass door, and we slipped inside. Really? You have an invisibility curtain, but not a padlock?
Chapter 10.
We took one step into the brightly lit lobby. My heart was pounding so hard my chest hurt. My knees were shaking. I'd never been so scared in my life. I glanced quickly all around. The lobby was enormous. It seemed to stretch on forever. The pink and yellow walls gave off a soft glow. The sparkly white ceiling seemed to be a mile above our heads. I didn't see a reception desk. No chairs or tables. No furniture of any kind. "Where is everyone?" Libby whispered. I could see that she was frightened, too. She clung to my arm, standing close beside me. The vast room was empty. Not another person in sight. I took another step, and I heard a soft beep. A beam of yellow light shot out of the wall and rolled down over my body. I felt a gentle tingling, kind of like a prickly feeling, the kind of feeling when your arm goes to sleep. It swept down quickly from my head to my feet. A second or two later, the light vanished and the tingly feeling went away. "What was that?" I whispered to Libby.
"What was what?" she replied.
"Didn't you feel that?"
She shook her head. "I didn't feel anything. Are you trying to scare me or something, Skipper?"
How is she still skeptical about these things?
"It was some kind of electric beam," I told her. "It shined on me when I stepped forward."
"Let's get out of here," she muttered.
"It's so quiet, it's creepy."
I turned my eyes to the row of elevators against the yellow wall. Did I dare take a ride on one? Was I brave enough to do a little exploring?
It's just a big office building," I told Libby, trying to work up my courage.
"Well, if it's an office building, where are the workers?" she demanded.
"Maybe the offices are closed," I suggested.
"On a Thursday?" Libby replied.
"It isn't a holiday or anything, unless it's one of those stupid Muslim holidays, but we don't celebrate those in America.
I think the building's empty, Skipper. I don't think anyone works here." I took a few steps towards the elevators. My sneakers thudded loudly on the hard marble floor.
"But all the lights are on, Libby," I said, and the door was open.
She hurried to catch up with me. Her eyes kept darting back and forth. I could see she was really scared.
"I know what you're thinking," she said. "You don't think this is just an office building. You think this is the secret headquarters of that comic book character, don't you, Skipper?"
I swallowed hard. My knees were still shaking. I tried to make them stop, but they wouldn't.
"Well, maybe it is," I replied, staring at the elevators across from us.
"I mean, how do you explain the invisibility curtain? It was in the comic book, and it was outside this building."
I can't explain it," Libby stammered.
"It's weird. It's too weird. This place gives me the creeps, Skipper."
"Skipper.
Skipper." "I really think there's only one way to find out the truth," I said. I tried to sound brave, but my voice shook nearly as much as my knees. Libby followed my gaze to the elevators. She guessed what I was thinking.
"No way," she cried, stepping back toward the glass doors.
"We'll just ride up and down," I told her. "Maybe open the elevator doors on a few floors and peek out."
"No way," Libby repeated. Her face suddenly appeared very pale. Her eyes were wide with fright.
"Libby, it will only take a minute," I insisted. "We've come this far. I have to explore a little. I don't want to go home without finding out what this building is."
"You can ride the elevators," she said.
"I'm going home," she said like a little bitch. She backed up to the glass doors. Outside, I saw a blue and white bus stop at the curb. A woman climbed off, carrying a baby in one hand, dragging a stroller in the other.
Oh God, parenthood must be the worst.
I could run out of the door and climb right onto that bus. I thought I could get out of here safe and sound, and I'd be on my way home. But what would happen when I got home? I would feel like a coward, a total wimp. I would spend day after day wondering about this building, wondering if I had actually discovered the secret headquarters of a real supervillain. If I jumped on the bus and rode home now, the building would still be a mystery, and the mystery would drive me crazy.
"Okay, Libby, you can go home if you want," I told her. "I'm going to ride the elevator to the top and back."
She stared at me thoughtfully. Then she rolled her eyes.
Okay, I'll come with you," she murmured, shaking her head.
I was glad. I really didn't want to go alone. "I'm only doing this because I feel sorry for you."
Yeah, I have the feeling Skipper's going to hear that a lot in his life,"
Libby said, following me across the marble floor to the elevators.
"Huh? Why do you feel sorry for me?" I demanded.
"Because you're so messed up," she replied. "You think a comic book can come to life. That's sad. That's really sad."
"Thank goodness High School Harry and the Beanhead can't come to life," I teased. Then I added, "What about the invisibility curtain? That was real, wasn't it?"
Libby didn't reply. Instead, she laughed. "You're serious about this," she said. The sound of her laughter echoed in the enormous empty lobby. It made me feel a little braver. I laughed too. "What's the big deal?" I asked myself. "So you're going to take an elevator ride, so what? It's not like the masked mutant's going to come up into the elevator with us," I assured myself. "We'll probably peek out of a lot of boring offices." Wow, my tone just changed. "And that's all." I pushed the lighted button on the wall. Instantly, the silver elevator door in front of us slid open. I poked my head into the elevator. It had walls of dark brown wood with a silver railing that went all the way around. There were no signs on the walls, no building directory, no words at all. I suddenly realized there were no signs on the lobby either. Not even a sign with the name of the building, or a sign to tell visitors where to check in. Weird. "Let's go," I said. Libby held back. I tugged her by the arm into the elevator. The doors slid shut silently behind us as soon as we stepped in. I turned to the control panel to the left of the door. It was a long, silvery rectangle filled with buttons. I pushed the button to the top floor. The elevator started to hum. It jerked slightly as we began to move. I turned to Libby. She had her back pressed against the back wall, her hand shoved in her jeans pockets. She stared straight ahead at the door. "We're moving," I murmured. The elevator picked up speed. "Hey!" Libby and I both cried out at the same time. "We're going down!" I exclaimed. I had pushed the button to the top floor, but we were dropping. Fast. Faster! I grabbed the railing with both hands. Where was it taking us? Would it ever stop? Yeah, you hear that sound? Yeah. You know what I'm drinking? Water. Yeah, just water. Huh? Yeah, I told you, Mom, I don't have a problem. I can stop whenever I want. I'm just having water right now. Throat hurts, a little dry. I'm a little parched from goosebumps, okay? Can't get drunk off water, Mom.
Chapter 11. The elevator stopped with a hard thud that made my knees bend. Whoa, I cried. I let go of the railing and turned to Libby inside. Libby beside me. You okay? She nodded. She stared straight ahead at the elevator door. We should have gone up, I muttered tensely. I pushed up. Why doesn't the door open? Libby asked in a trembling voice. We both stared at the door. I stepped to the center of the elevator. Open! I commanded it. The door didn't move. We're trapped in here, Libby said, her voice getting shrill and tiny. No, I replied, still trying to be the brave one. It'll open, watch. It's just slow. The door didn't open. The elevator must be broken, Libby wailed. We'll be trapped down here forever. The air is starting to run out already. I can't breathe!
Don't panic, I warned, looking down at my towel, struggling to keep my voice calm.
Take a deep breath, Libby. There's plenty of air. She obediently sucked in a deep breath. She let it out in a long whoosh.
Why won't the door open? I knew we shouldn't have done this.
I turned to the control panel. A button at the bottom read, open. I pushed it. Instantly, the door slid open. I turned back to Libby. See, we're okay.
But where are we? She cried. I stepped to the doorway and poked my head out. It was very dark. I could see some kind of heavy machinery in the darkness.
We're in the basement, I think, I told Libby. There's all kinds of pipes and a big furnace and things.
Let's go, Libby urged, hanging back against the elevator wall.
I took a step out the elevator door and glanced both ways. I couldn't see much. More machinery. A row of metal trash cans. A stack of long metal boxes.
Come on, Skipper, Libby demanded. Let's go back up now.
I stepped back into the elevator and pushed the button marked lobby. The door didn't close. The elevator didn't move, didn't hum. I pushed lobby again. I pushed it 5 or 6 times. Pushy, 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 pushy. Nothing happened. I suddenly had a lump in my throat as big as a watermelon. I really didn't want to be stuck down in this dark basement. I started pushing buttons wildly. I pushed everything. I pushed a red button marked emergency 5 or 6 times. Nothing.
I don't believe this, I choked out. Let's get out and take a different elevator, Libby suggested.
Good idea, I thought. There was a long row of elevators in the lobby. We'll just get out of this one and push the button for another one to come down and get us. I led the way out into the dark basement. Libby stayed close behind me.
Oh!
We both let out low cries as the elevator door quickly slid shut behind us.
What is going on? I demanded. Why wouldn't it close before?
Libby didn't reply. I waited for my eyes to adjust to the darkness. Then I saw what Libby was staring at.
"Where are the other elevators?" she cried. We were staring at a smooth, bare wall. The elevator that has brought us down here was the only elevator on the wall. I spun around, checking out the other walls, but it was too dark to see very far. "The other elevators don't come down here, I guess," Libby murmured in a trembling voice. I searched the wall for a button to push to bring our elevator back. I couldn't find one. No button.
"There's no way out," Libby wailed. "No way out at all."
Chapter dozen. Maybe there are elevators on the other wall, I said, pointing across the room. God damn, I'm losing it. That was pointing across.
Maybe there are elevators on the other wall, I said, pointing across the huge dark room. Maybe, Libby repeated doubtfully. Maybe there's a stairway or something, I said.
Maybe, she said softly.
A sudden noise made me jump, a rumble followed by a grinding hum. Just the furnace starting up, I told Libby. Let's find a way out of here, she urged. I'm never going in an elevator again as long as I live. I could feel her hand on my shoulder as I started to make my way through the darkness. The huge gray furnace rumbled and coughed. Another big machine made a soft, clattering sound as we edged past it. Anybody down here? I called. My voice echoed off the long, dust-covered pipes that ran along the low ceiling above our heads. I cupped my hands around my mouth and called again. Anybody here? Can anybody hear me?
Silence.
The only sounds I could hear were the rumble of the furnace and the soft scrape of our sneakers as Libby and I slowly crept over the floor. As we came near the far wall, we could see that there were no elevators over there. The smooth plaster wall was bare except for a thick triangle of cobwebs near the ceiling. There's got to be some stairs leading out of here, Libby whispered, close behind me. Dim light shone through a narrow doorway up ahead. Let's see where this leads, I said, brushing the stringy spiderwebs off my face. We stepped through the doorway and found ourselves in a long hallway. Dust-covered ceiling bulbs cast pale light on the concrete floor. Anybody here? I called again. My voice sounded hollow in the long tunnel of a hallway. No reply. Dark doorways lined both sides of the hallway. I peeked into each door as we passed. I saw sacks of cartons, tall file cabinets, strange machinery I didn't recognize. One large room was jammed with enormous coils of metal cable. Another room had sheets of metal piled nearly to the ceilings. Hello? I called. Hey-o!
No reply.
Flashing red lights inside a large room caught my eye. I stopped at the doorway and stared at some sort of control panel. One wall was filled with blinking red and green lights. In front of the light stood a long counter of dials and gears and levers. Three tall stools were placed along the counter, but no one sat in them. No one worked the controls. The room was empty as the rest of this strange, frightening basement. Weird, huh? I whispered to Libby. When she didn't answer, I turned to make sure she was okay. Libby?
She was gone.
Chapter a baker's dozen.
I spun around. Libby? My entire body shook. Where are you? I squinted back down the long gray hallway. No sign of her. Libby, is this some kind of dumb joke? I started, but the rest of my words were caught in my throat. Breathing hard, I forced myself to retrace our steps. Libby? I stopped at every door and called her name. Libby! The hallway curved and I followed it. I began jogging my hands down.
That was weird.
I began jogging, my hands down stiffly at my sides, calling her name, searching every door, peering into every dark room. How could she get lost? I asked myself, feeling my panic rise until I could barely breathe. She was right behind me. I turned another corner, into a hallway I hadn't explored yet.
Libby?
The narrow hall led to an enormous, brightly lit room. I had to shut my eyes against the sudden bright light. When I opened them, I found myself nearly face to face with a gigantic machine. Bright floodlights from the high ceiling covered it in light. The machine had to be a block long. A big control panel filled with dials and buttons and lights stood against the side. A long, flat part, like a conveyor belt, led to several rollers. And at the very end of the machine stood a huge white wheel. No! A cylinder? No! A roll of white paper. A printing press, I realized. I lurched into the room, stepping around stacks of paper and cardboard boxes. The floor was littered with paper, ink-smeared paper, crumpled, folded, and ripped. As I staggered towards the huge printing press, the sea of paper rose up nearly to my knees. Libby, are you in here? Libby! Silence. The room was as empty as all the others. The paper crackled under my sneakers. I made my way to a long table at the back of the room. I found a red stool in front of the table and I dropped down on it. I kicked big sheets of paper away from my legs and glanced around the room. 100 questions pushed into my mind at once. Where is Libby? How could she disappear like that? Is she somewhere close behind me? Will she follow the hallway to this big room? This would be a great opportunity to insert a joke, except for I'm just phoning it in now because I'm very tired and want to go to sleep. Where is everyone? Why is this place totally deserted? Is this where they print the comic books? Am I in the basement of Collectible Comics, the company that publishes The Masked Mutant? Questions, questions. My brain felt about to burst. I stared around the cluttered room, my eyes rolling past the gigantic printing press, searching for Libby. Where was she? Where? I turned back to the table and gasped. I nearly toppled off the stool. The Masked Mutant was staring up at me.
Chapter 14. This is going to be the last one I read tonight. Then I'm going to go to sleep and stop reading Goosebumps every single day.
A large color drawing of the Masked Mutant stared at me from the table. Startled, I picked it up and examined it. It had been drawn on thick poster board in colored inks. The Masked Mutant's cape swept behind him. Through his mask, his eyes appeared to stare out at me. Evil. Angry eyes. The ink glistened on the page as if it was still wet. I rubbed my thumb over the edge of the cape. The ink didn't come off. I wondered if Steranko drew this portrait, I thought, studying. Glancing across the table, I saw a stack of papers on a low counter that ran along the entire back wall. Hopping off the tall stool, I made my way over to the counter and began shuffling through the papers. They were ink drawings and pencil sketches. Many of them were of the Masked Mutant. They showed him in different poses. Some of them showed him moving his molecules around, changing into wild animals and strange, unearthly creatures. I opened a thick folder and found a dozen color sketches of the members of the League of Good Guys. Then I found a stack of pencil drawings of characters I'd never seen before. This must be where they make the comic books, I told myself. I was so excited about seeing the actual drawings and sketches, I nearly forgot about Libby. The pink and green building must be the headquarters of Collectible Comics, I realized. I was starting to feel calmer. My fears dropped away like the feathers off the battling bird boy. After all, there was nothing to be afraid of. I hadn't stumbled into the headquarters of the world's most evil supervillain. I was in the basement of the comic book offices. This is where the writers and artists worked, and that is where they print the comic books every month. So why should I be afraid? I shuffled through folder after folder, making my way down the long counter. I found a pile of layouts for a comic that I had just bought. I was so excited seeing the actual art. The page was really big, at least twice as big as the comic book. I guess that the artists made their drawings much bigger than the actual page, and that they shrank the drawings down when they printed them. I found some really new pencil drawings of the Masked Mutant. I knew they were new because I didn't recognize them from my comics at all, and I have them all. Drawing after drawing, my eyes were practically spinning. I never dreamt that Collectible Comics were made right in Riverview Falls. I flipped through a sketchbook of Penguin People portraits. I never liked the Penguin People. I know they're good guys and that people think they're great, but I think their black and white comics costumes look silly. I was having a great time, really enjoying myself. Of course, it had to end. It ended when I opened the last folder on the counter and stared at the sketches inside. I gaped at them in disbelief. My hands trembled as I shuffled from one to the next. "This is impossible," I cried out loud. I was staring at sketches of me.
Ooh, goddamn.
All right, that concludes part one of the Attack of the Mutant on Dune Reads Goosebumps. I'm Dune. This is where I'm just going to ramble for a second or two because, you know, the music's playing right now that Dusty made that's lovely. And then, you know, I'm probably not going to get one up tomorrow as I have been doing every single fucking day.
because I'm going to go eat some chicken wings and get drunk and play magic cards.
Yeah. Hello, ladies. I hope you like gorging yourself on chicken and playing Magic the Gathering.
Oh. Oh, you don't?
Well, fine. Stay spooky then, bitches.